GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. I'll be your host for today's GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. You know, this food waste problem is really, really huge, especially for households. So how can we do better? Robert, you've been cruising around in a green, fuel-efficient Lexus. Now, I know it saves you money at the gas pump, but is it worth the extra bucks on the sticker?
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Well, we got a chance to do another green road test. I had the opportunity to drive the sporty CT200H F Sport. And here to review that with me and share his impression is Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher Tom Appel, who we affectionately call the Guru of Gears. Welcome, Tom.
Hello.
Well, the first thing about this car, Tom, is that they got to get a better name for it. There's too many numbers and letters. What's going on here with the name?
Yeah. The Lexus naming nomenclature is an alphabet soup of letters and numbers, and I'm not sure that anyone can name with any degree of confidence two Lexus models. It's very confusing. So if we wanted to, we could refer to this as the small hybrid Lexus and be very accurate.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the car, and we can start out by what I liked with it. First, it's appointed beautifully. It's leather, and don't you love the way leather smells in a new car? It just has that great new car leathery smell. But I think it's for those guys that could wear those new slim suits, because as sort of a portly man, I had real trouble fitting in this car. How about you?
Yeah, I'm a big guy, as you know, Robert. I don't know how many of our listeners know that, but I'm a pretty big guy, and sitting in the 200H is rough for me. It has a surprisingly wide center console, and the seating position is fairly low. You get down into the vehicle. It's kind of old school in that way. So the net effect is that you feel like you're flying a small plane, which can be very nice once you're in the car, but it's a bit confining. The general sense is not one of spaciousness.
And also, as a four-seater and a four-door, I had some passengers in the back, and that's all I heard from people who never complained was how small the back was. So really effectively, maybe three people you can handle in that car, or two adults and two very small children. But again, it was very well appointed. It handled well. I thought that was a great description. You do feel like you're in the cockpit of a Cessna. This thing is sporty. It's tight. But it is a little small inside, and it got good mileage too. We averaged somewhere between 42 to 45.
Yeah. And Consumer Guide testing, we had it once in the dead of winter and averaged just 30 miles an hour. But I went back. We have tested other CT200Hs and seen more like 45 miles per gallon. I'm sorry, not miles per hour, miles per gallon. So the vehicle is efficient. What people may not know about this vehicle is it's really technically a Lexus version of the Prius. It's a little bit better appointed. It is also a little bit smaller, but it's also a little bit sportier. It's geared for a little bit quicker acceleration, better handling, and it has some of the equipment to prove that. It's also, interestingly, the entry-level car for Lexus, and it's only available as a hybrid. So Lexus made a very interesting decision to make its entry point a hybrid vehicle.
Well, the other thing that was really gave you a bit of nosebleed was the sticker price. This thing listed, the MSRP was around $32,000. It had the F Sport package, which added about another $3,000. The headlamps, the LED, another navigation system, $3,500. And pre-collision system dynamic radar cruise control of $1,500, which put this right at $42,000, which I found quite expensive for really an upgraded Prius.
Yeah, it is expensive. There's two ways to look at it. It's an entry level Lexus, so at $42,000, maybe that's not too much, but it is in fact very much an economy car. It's not that quick. It's not that sharp handling, and it's not that nicely appointed. It's very much this It feels a little bit entry level on that coin. $42,000 is a lot of money. On a Lexus, there are a couple of things you do get. You do get the Lexus warranty. You do get the Lexus concierge service at the dealership. So there are these things that offset that. But yeah, if you're looking for a Lexus and you want to get it cheap, this is a way to do it. But you can also upgrade to the Lexus NX, which is the small crossover, which I think feels a lot more like a Lexus and is available in hybrid form as well.
So one of the things that makes you read the manual on this car is all the safety features. And so since most of us don't read, Tom, tell us some of the highlights of the great safety features that are in this car.
Yeah, all the stuff is there that you would expect. Plus, now available are things like lane departure warning and obstacle detection, things that are coming online just in the last couple of years. And how they work and where they work is a little bit confusing. It takes some time for new owners to become aware of how they work. Additionally, this vehicle has three drive modes, an economy, a sport, and a standard thing. A thing that I don't think people are going to touch very much, the knob to control that function is rather large in the center console. I think most people are going to leave it in standard comfort mode most of the time. But there is a sport mode that could be useful if you're in some place with a lot of corners or a lot of hills.
So how would you sum this car up, Tom?
Wow. At best, I think it's a kind of a classy small car for people who are looking to do something green. There are things that you can buy that are sportier, but if you don't care that much about driving dynamics and you're looking for something classy like a Lexus and you want to feel good about your purchase, this might be the way to go.
The only thing I would add to that is it's for people who have a lot of green because it's a bit expensive for what you get. But Tom, it's always great talking with you. You are the guru of gears and have an infinite amount of wisdom when it comes to cars. And so we appreciate you sharing our thoughts, and I'll look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks when we test drive the next car.
It's always a pleasure, Robert. Thanks.
That's Consumer Guide Automotive publisher Tom Appel joining us on GreenSense for a green road test of the Lexus 200 CTH F-Sport. I'm Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit GreenSenseFarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit GreenSenseFarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit GreenSenseFarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you.
Food waste is a big problem. Of the 40% of the food that's wasted in the U.S., much of it is safe to eat. And what's not can be reused instead of ending up in landfills. We're joined by Joanna Underwood of Energy Vision, which just put out the report, Food Waste Erased. Joanna, welcome to GreenSense.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Well, your report was written in response to the UN's goal to cut food waste by 50% by the year 2030. Any other reasons why this report was written?
Yes, the U.S. has a similar goal. And it's most important, I think, for us to focus on being one of the richest economies in the world, doing something here at home to move toward that goal. And that was our primary reason for writing this report, to talk about what Americans can do.
What can people do in their homes to reduce food waste, specifically edible food waste?
Edible food waste, which we rather call a resource rather than waste, is a matter of simple practices, like being more careful about what you purchase as a consumer so that food doesn't sit and rot in the refrigerator, by using leftovers effectively and eating them and not letting them be thrown out. I think the question of what you purchase and how efficiently you use it is important. And then if there are produced foods, canned foods, that a consumer finds they're not going to eat, they can be donated to food pantries. And the idea is, don't make food waste in your home.
Well, let's talk about inedible food waste that you produce at home. What are the responsible ways to deal with that?
Inedible food waste. Our report deals with both the edible and the inedible, as you know. The inedible food waste goes into, by and large, the waste stream. And consumers can separate that waste from their other waste. Hopefully, more and more cities will be collecting organic waste separately. And it can be used in one of two ways. Either it can be put into compost piles and then used effectively for soil enrichment, or better than that, food waste that's collected separately can be put in tanks called anaerobic digesters, which just means a tank that doesn't have air in it. And the bacterial action generates the decomposition of that waste. And as it decomposes, it emits methane gases. And if those methane gases are collected, they can be turned into a wonderful source of fuel for power generation, home heating, or best of all, fuel for vehicles.
So let's talk a little bit about renewable natural gas. As you've mentioned, it's something that this inedible food waste can be turned into. How much is currently being produced, and how much more could we be producing if we manage those inedible food waste streams better?
We're throwing out about 70 million tons of organic waste a year, and a lot of that is food waste. It's a big resource, not just a little resource, and it's coming out of every city, every community. It's also coming out of every farm and every food processing plant. And if we were to actually harness all of that inedible food waste along with other organic waste, we could displace about half the diesel fuel used in heavy-duty vehicles across this country, which are a major source of pollution in cities. And it's a very clean, it's also a carbon-free fuel.
How much of food waste is predicated on bad agricultural policy?
Oh, boy. Well, about 10%, 10 million tons, I would say, of the food waste in the United States simply rots on farm fields, which is one issue. It comes to the production process. There simply needs to be better ways to get agricultural produce distributed so that it doesn't go to waste. And the USDA is very committed to this whole process. So is the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And they are all looking at the strategies that they can use to make this work.
So what's it going to take to get more households and companies to work to effectively reduce food waste?
I think it's going to take what it always takes to change people, which is never easy. It takes publicizing this issue. It takes vocal publicizing of what Americans are losing economically. I mean, $600 per family of four is a lot of economic loss. It's talking about it. It's providing leadership. It is providing ways to collect food that is separated. That's mostly the inedible, but also the edible, by city, either municipal waste systems or by supporting food banks that are collecting edible food to redistribute. It's not a one-size-fits-all question, but
well, Joanna,
it's a matter
about,
of people being aware of it.
What about food being too cheap? If you don't see a lot of caviar being wasted because it's expensive, what happens if the price of food went up? Wouldn't that make people be much more resourceful on how they deal with it?
It might be. There are people that don't care about a little bit more expensive food, and there are people to whom it is terribly important just so they can feed themselves, and they're not what we call food insecure. But raising the price of food sounds like an easy answer, but it's more about people's daily habits. They probably would be more efficient, a lot of families, if food costs more, but that's certainly not the only solution. It's about being sure there are vehicles for the food that consumers get and don't eat to give it away or to have it collected for other use.
Well, we're all about a balanced approach, and we know this is a complex issue, so we appreciate what you're doing, and keep writing those reports and getting your education and outreach out there, and maybe someday we'll change behavior.
It's a big challenge, but it's a challenge that I think more and more Americans are up to. One impact that I didn't mention, that we didn't discuss, is the impact of food waste on climate change. Every place that food is rotting, it's generating methane, which is a powerful greenhouse gas, and I think people are more and more concerned about that issue. So there are a lot of pressures that may be brought to bear, economic and incentives to help change practices, and we're working on that.
Joanna, thanks for joining us on Green Sense.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Joanna Underwood of Energy Vision talking about food waste. We've provided a link to the report on this week's show notes. Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Technology has helped the trucking industry clean up its act. Improved diesel engines and emission control systems make up 30% of all the trucks on the road in the U.S. To tell us more about clean diesel and its positive impact on the environment is Alan Schaefer with the Diesel Technology Forum. Alan, welcome to Green Sense.
Great to be with you.
Well, let's start with engine design. How have diesel engines improved in the last few years, specifically for diesel trucks?
Sure. Well, it's been quite a transformation, really, over the last 15 years that began in 2000 with the establishment of two challenges. First being for manufacturers to virtually eliminate particulate emissions from diesel engines and heavy trucks on highway operations. And then secondly, in addition to that, to reduce emissions of nitrogen oxide by over 98%. And that milestone came in 2010. So
Alan, how did the engine design change to make that happen?
Well, there are three pieces to the clean diesel system. First of all is the availability of ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel, and that became nationwide in 2006. Second was the advanced engine technology, which is using more sophisticated turbocharging and engine management to burn fuel more efficiently and to only use the amount of fuel that's needed at the moment. And then lastly is the advanced emissions control technology like selective catalytic reduction systems, which really scrub out almost all of the NOx emissions and also diesel particulate filters.
What was the cause for this advancement? Was it government forcing the industry to change, or was it innovation that came from within the industry?
Well, I think there's always been a motivation in the trucking industry to have high fuel efficiency vehicles. Customers demand it because fuel is one of the most significant operating costs. But industry also had to balance the government's desire to have very low emissions from these commercial truck engines. So really, it was a combination of things, but certainly achieving the emission standards was the leading element.
Because as a consumer or a citizen out there, we all hated to be behind one of those big trucks emitting all that smoky, smelly exhaust fumes. But now, newer diesels achieve near zero emissions. How did they do that, and how do you calculate that?
Well, since 2007, all commercial trucks built, sold in the U.S. have had a particulate filter. So that took care of any of the black clouds of smoke that you might be talking about. And that's not normal diesel operation anyway. That's mal maintenance or somebody that's tampering with the engine. And so The achieving the standards, as I mentioned, was really the advancements in the fuel quality and also these advanced emissions control systems like selective catalytic reduction. So they have really little chemical treatment plants on board the commercial trucks today that scrub out nearly all the emissions.
Well, your latest report says 30% of the trucks are now clean diesel. How long did it take to get there, and will it eventually reach 100%?
Well, the progression increased from about 25.7%, I believe it was, in the previous year, up to about 30% this year. So the acquisition of new trucks is really based on the economic demands and freight demands on the industry. So more demands means the need for newer equipment or to replace equipment. So that'll help the penetration even higher. And diesel remains the power plant of choice for commercial trucking. And so at some point, we're going to see these numbers really get to 100%. It may take 10 years, but already today we have some states like Indiana and Utah. Indiana's at 51%. More than half of their registered commercial truck fleet is of the newer generation technology.
And why is Indiana so far ahead of other states?
Well, hard to speculate on that. The research that we did not drill down into that level, but a couple things come to mind. One is a friendly business climate where the trucking industry may choose to register their vehicles and operate as a basis there from tax and other reasons. And I think secondly, of course, it's in the nation's heartland. And when you look at the map, the Midwestern region, on average, 34% of all the trucks in the Midwest, as we define it, are of the newer generation technology. So they're a little bit ahead of the curve there.
My guest is Alan Schaefer with the Diesel Technology Forum, and we're talking about how diesel engines and trucks have made great advancements both in their efficiency and outputs of particulates and pollutants. Alan, one of the other issues that's very obvious out there is the price of diesel fuel has skyrocketed over the last 10 or 15 years. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why has it gone up, and how has that forced technology to assimilate quicker?
Sure. Well, diesel fuel is the global fuel of work. So it is in high demand, not just in the U.S., but around the world. This is the fuel that powers all the commercial goods movement industries, farming, rail freight, locomotives, marine vessels, et cetera. So it's the fuel of work. So diesel fuel prices are subject to global demand and supply influences. So what we've seen, we saw a period about 4 or 5 years ago where diesel prices were smacking $4 a gallon. But today we're down into the 220, 230 range nationally. And what we've seen is as the U.S. enhances its domestic supply and production, that diesel fuel prices are staying low and fairly close to gasoline, actually. So we're pretty confident that the supply issues of ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel are such that prices are going to remain at this lower level for some time now.
But there was a time where diesel was much cheaper than gasoline. Now it's at par or slightly more, depending on the day you look at it. Why?
Well, you're dating yourself just a little bit there, Robert. there was a time, and this was back in the 90s, and when EPA required refiners to reduce sulfur in diesel fuel, that set in motion a period of 7 or 8 years where the price of diesel ticked upward to recover those investments. And so what we have, that was back in the 90s. So what we have today is the entire diesel fuel supply for on- or off-road equipment or engines is all ultra-low sulfur diesel, which is no more than 15 parts per million sulfur. Actually, diesel is actually a cleaner fuel than gasoline when it comes to sulfur, and gasoline is actually cleaning up its act now for sulfur as well. So been one of the leaders there in terms of cleaner petroleum fuels.
So we've been talking about improved engines. What about different fuels like biodiesel made from food waste and other inputs? How has that been integrated, and can we see more of that being used?
We certainly can envision that. I think, first of all, important to point out that the opportunity is significant. There's about 35 billion gallons of diesel fuel consumed in the U.S. last year. 3 billion gallons of biodiesel, advanced renewable biofuels produced. Quite a bit of opportunity to grow there. Any diesel engine can use renewable biofuels as long as they're of a high quality. And commercial truck fleets generally can use a blend of about 20% biofuels and 80% ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel. So it's a way to reduce the demand for fossil fuels by incorporating more renewables, and not just biodiesel from soybean-based products, but also advanced renewable fuels that are made from waste products like biomass, waste fats, vegetable oil. Those things can now be processed in a way just like a refiner, very suitable to storage and transport, even more than some of the basic biodiesel fuels.
So in closing, I'd like you to tell us the kinds of positive environmental impacts this technology and fuels have had on the trucking industry, and also talk about some of the positive economic impacts.
Well, one of the most important aspects of this for the trucking industry is the idea of using less fuel. So taking as a whole, these new trucks on the road in the last 5 years, 2011 through 2016, have saved about 4.2 billion gallons of diesel. And so for truckers, you know, that's putting almost $1,000 extra in your wallet every year for folks that have the newer generation fuel as compared technology as compared to the older trucks. So that's important first and foremost. And these new trucks have about 3 to 5% better fuel economy than their replacement vehicle, the older vehicles. So there's definitely a motivation there. From a societal benefit, these cleaner diesel technology and its efficiency has reduced about 43 million tons of carbon dioxide and about 21 million tons of NOx and 1.2 million tons of particulates. So as these newer trucks get into the fleet and the population, not only are they saving fuel, but they're also really helping to drive clean air improvements across the country.
Well, Alan, I'd like to ask you one more question, but we're out of time, and that's on autonomous trucks, because I think that's coming, and I think that'll have a big impact. But I think that's the subject of a whole nother interview, so we'll have to get you back on the show. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Alan Schaefer with the Diesel Technology Forum, talking clean diesel. This is Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Help us help you. Head over to the greensensefarm.com website, click on radio show, and support our Podbean patron drive. Now more than ever, you need to support independent media so we can continue to put on great shows that feature sustainable innovations. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can also check out the list of radio stations that air our show. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.